for me personally, when approaching the role, it's sort of hard to figure out because there's so many things that he gets hit with. I think that Donnie is what he comes in contact with. In the simplest terms, like in most abstract terms, I could say it's a journey. Like it's just a journey about discovering who you are. And the irony of the whole thing is that, like, hopefully by the end, it's not only Donnie who realizes it, but the audience in a way. And they have to go back, and they have to watch it again, and they have to watch it again. But it's just like this ridiculous, fantastic, completely absurd, yet completely naturalistic and realistic mixture of humor, like sadness, comedy, and madness, like rolled up in this ball of this like crazy story journey. It forces you, if it does force you at all, to come to your own conclusion about what it's about. And that's the coolest thing. It's like an individual experience for everyone. It's not about one thing, which I think the coolest thing about talking about it is that no one can really come to any finite or like objective conclusion.
You're listening to Conspiracy Theories in a Popular Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt. And you are listening to part two of the Donnie Darko film analysis. If you haven't listened to part one, I beg you to do so. I'll put a link in the show notes. If I forget to put a link in the show notes, it was last week. We published part one. You can go to IlluminatiWatcher.com, as always, to find, you know, stuff. And in the first part, just to recapture what we talked about, I yammered for about 15 minutes about the film and the inception of the film and how it's kind of like Netflix's Dark series, but more understandable, which I found curious because the name Donnie Darko, it's right there in the title, Donnie Darko, dark, right? Crazy. I didn't put that together the first time I talked to you about this movie. But the film had pop culture events. Is that pop culture? Columbine and 9/11? What would you call that? Yeah, I guess pop culture, right? No, not really. You know what I'm saying. And we started the film, the plot. And in the film, Donnie was having these hallucinations? Visitations by Frank, the crazy bunny? And we were laying out all sorts of ideas, and I told you to put a bunch of stuff in your back pocket. Like how Donnie's mom, her name is Rose, which will connect us into Aleister Crowley, which today will complete the movie, and then I will give you the in conclusion wrap up about what this is all about. According to me, it's just according to me, doesn't make it so. And Jake Gyllenhaal, who was interviewed for this, said everyone's got their own interpretation, and that one's just mine. There are many like it, but this one is mine. And in the first part, we talked about Frank visiting Donnie Darko like Crowley was visited by AWOS. And we're going to talk today more about Halloween, the timing of this movie, and the apocalypse, the harbinger of the new age coming through. We talked about the alchemical idea that Donnie presented. Donnie's being channeled full of knowledge and the gnosis and the wisdom. He says destruction is a form of creation. How did he know about the alchemy that would present itself on a global level with 9/11? I don't know. But that's what he did. We talked about Jim Cunningham, who's played by Patrick Swayze, and how he was like this guru cult leader. We talked about Donnie Darko's younger sister and how she was reading the story she created. And the director made sure you heard the passage that said the prince is led into a world full of strange and beautiful magic. Why did we hear only one excerpt? Why was this even part of the story? Because the director is showing you Donnie Darko is making contact with an entity that is teaching him magic and creating a new reality, which is what this movie is all about. And I will prove it to you today. The last thing we talked about, Donnie was having another, you know, he's visited by Frank in his dreams, kind of. So we don't know if he's hallucinating or it's a dream or if it's reality or what's going on. and he touched a mirror, and the mirror rippled. We start talking about how this is the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, Bina, I don't know how you pronounce it. I don't follow Kabbalah. The Palace of Mirrors, and Frank's on the other side, and he wants to communicate with Donnie. Now we're ready to pick up on part two. Anything I miss? Oh, and thank you for the reviews. I, you guys are the best. I asked you to leave reviews for the podcast, ratings, reviews, and I would start reading them. And boy, oh boy, did you ever. I appreciate that. Thank you. Lots of five stars. Very, you know, fill this, my ego cup up. I have a lot of negative voices in my head. And I get negative reviews sometimes, and it really gets me bummed out. So it's nice to know there's a lot of you that listen to this show and love it enough to take your time. And I get it. Time is precious. You don't want to take the time to scroll through and click that button and even write something on top of it. My God, what did I do to deserve such great listeners? Because we're on the same team. You know it, I know it, we know it. All right, that's all I'm going to talk about with the reviews. If you want to help the show, you want to support the show, that's one great way you can do it. I'm concerned with the future of censorship. I might be getting paranoid, but hey, I'm a conspiracy guy. Of course I'm paranoid. I feel like they're going to shove shows like mine at the bottom of the search list. And the only way to combat that I know of is to keep making the content you want. And for you to tell me you like it. Give it a 5-star. And that helps push it up. Okay. Moving on. Part two. Let's wrap this film up. We've actually got a lot to get through. Let's talk about... Okay, so the film... The next scene... Like I told you in part one, there's lots of scenes. Lots of rapid-fire scenes. So... We see Patrick Swayze, a.k.a. Jim Cunningham. He's still teaching his guru stuff about fear and love. And they're reading these exercises on the board in the classroom. And I think I painted the picture wrong. Mrs. Fisher, who's married to Dr. Fisher, who is besties with Jim Cunningham, played by Patrick Swayze, she's the teacher, right? But she's all about that guru action, and she's teaching the principles laid forth by Jim Cunningham. All right? All this will be important later, I promise. They are doing exercises, indoctrinating the kids. And Donnie has chosen to come to the board and work through a situation and describe whether someone is acting out of fear or love.
Good, good, very good. Mr. Darko.
Ling Ling finds a wallet on the ground filled with money. She takes the wallet to the address on the driver's license but keeps the money inside the wallet. I'm sorry, Ms. Foreman. I don't get this.
Just place an X on the lifeline in the appropriate place.
No, I mean, I know what to do. I don't get this. You can't just lump things into two categories. Things aren't that simple.
The lifeline is divided that way.
Well, life isn't that simple. I mean, who cares if Ling Ling returns the wallet and keeps the money? It has nothing to do with either fear or love.
Fear and love are the deepest of human emotions.
Okay, but you're not listening to me. There are other things that need to be taken into account here, like the whole spectrum of human emotion. You can't just lump everything into these two categories and then just deny everything else.
If you don't complete the assignment, you'll get a 0 for the day.
And you hear what Donnie says? He says, not that simple. You can't pick one or the other. That's a false duality. You can't say something is good or evil. Not in this new spirituality, not in the new age. There's so much shades of gray, sometimes evil's not even bad. Sometimes it's not. That's what they say. That's the Gnostic belief. You can't call something evil because nothing is good and nothing is evil. Everything just is. And you could take this in a lot of directions. It's not wrong to say that there's degrees of gray in between the two. Anyway, at this point, it's obvious Frank is channeling knowledge into Donnie. The crazy bunny is influencing Donnie, taking him down the rabbit hole, just like Alice in Wonderland, who followed the rabbit to her new understanding of the world, an inverted reality? Well, Frank has given Donnie this knowledge, the gnosis, the Gnostic reality of how things work. Well, we see the school. Finally, we see the school, and it's got it's a cross with the IHS under it, confirming Donnie is going to a private Christian school. Because we suspected that, but I thought it odd, the whole film, not one mention of Jesus Christ, not one painting of Creed Jesus on the wall in the house. I found it very odd, but sure enough, now we know for sure. But it's very strange, the teachers aren't talking about it, they're talking about the guru, Jim Cunningham, more than anything. So, and again, I'll have the images on the Instagram, at Isaac WhatsApp, like and subscribe, but you already did that last episode, thank you. Just in case you missed it, link in the show notes. That's where I'm going to put the images from Donnie Darko. To support this whole show, you can follow along. Now, Donnie, he's very intrigued by time travel because Frank is trying to channel this information into him, and he tracks down his science teacher, whom he spoke with earlier. But they have an interesting discussion on time travel. And the teacher tells him about wormholes and Einstein-Rosen bridges that could allow time travel to actually happen. So the teacher, and first off, the quantum nature of reality is going to be part of the new spirituality, the new religion of science. That's a big bomb to drop on you, but that's where we're going with everything. Don't believe me? Don't believe me, just watch. 10 years we'll be there. And I don't know if it's wrong. Again, like I always say, I don't know if that's wrong. I've read Dr. Joe Dispenza's couple of his books. He talks about the quantum model of reality, and I don't know that it's wrong. I don't know. So the teacher hands Donnie a book called The Philosophy of Time Travel, and this was written by Roberta Sparrow, a.k.a. Grandma Death. Remember the teacher that was walking back and forth through her mailbox? Just like we all did during the 2020, during the thing that will never go away. And it's revealed that she was a science teacher before she went a little, you know, loopy. So the plot thickens. Now, and for what it's worth, I do recall on the Reddit conspiracies, one theory is that Donnie's girlfriend, Gretchen, a.k.a. Jenna Malone from Hunger Games, she's in fact Roberta Sparrow on this time loop. I don't know if that's true. Interesting idea. So anyway, Donnie, he thinks all of this is connected. And he tells his therapist what Grandma Death whispered in his ear earlier in the film that I told you we would reveal, and now's the time. And it's revealed that Grandma Death whispered that every living creature on Earth dies alone. Very dark stuff. And Donnie recollects a dog that he had that went under his porch to die alone, as Grandma Death claimed. Now, you could take this and know that Donnie is subscribing to a philosophy of the Church of Satan, that all men and women are merely animals. Just evolved animals, that's all we are, according to them. But Donnie also says the search for God is absurd because we end up dying alone anyhow. Very dark. I mean, he's putting the dark in Darko, right? Now, I thought, and let's get personal, why not, right? I thought, well, that seems like a real pessimistic view of the world. But then it reminded me of my own father passing away. Someone cue up the light piano music. Let's get real sensitive here. We're going back in the memory banks about 9 years, okay? My dad, who was a real tough son of a bitch, okay? He died really young, at 56. Because, like, you live a hard lifestyle, and, you know. And, I visited him in a hospice. And I remember, like, and I didn't... okay, so I grew up in Pennsylvania, right? PA? I grew up in PA. but I live in Utah, right? Because I was in the military, moved around a bunch. Here I am in Utah. Don't ask. And and my father wasn't doing well. I went to visit him. Come back home to Utah. Find out he's going down fast. So I go back out, and he's in the hospice. And my plane's flying out of Philly the next morning. Early. And I stayed with my pops as long as I could. And, you know, we had this tumultuous relationship, but, you know, we didn't have a sitcom relationship like you see on TV, which I would argue most guys and their father is probably somewhere in the ballpark of normal. But we weren't, like, real touchy-feely. We weren't big into that stuff, right, growing up. And I stayed with him as long as I could. And I remember the whole night, my dad's struggling. I was on my laptop trying to stay awake for him because, like, he would, like, kind of, like, pass out and then come to. I mean, if you've ever seen someone die, it's nothing like in the movies, okay? In the movies, the movies are funny. It's always like, oh, go on without me. And, like, they just kind of chill and they just close their eyes and peacefully go. And that's, you know, that wasn't what I witnessed. And my dad was like, he would kind of conk out and come to, and he wasn't able to talk at this point. And, like, I remember, like, I was holding his hand because he would kind of wake up and come to, and, like, it's almost like he was scared or something. I don't know. I couldn't communicate with him. And, you know, again, this was very abnormal. It wasn't something I did. Like, we weren't affectionate people. And I would just watch my laptop, and, like, he would come to, and I'd, hey, it's okay, Dad, whatever. And I stayed up as long as I could, stayed up the whole night, had to roll out at like 4 a.m. to go catch this flight. And, I left through a ball and just unloaded all this suppressed emotion. Right. Cause I didn't want to cry. Cause my dad was a tough guy. Right. And, I didn't want to like show that. I don't know why. Don't ask me. Weird, you know, humans were weird people. So anyway, point being, I say all that to say this. He didn't die until I left. He waited until I was gone, and it wasn't like immediately. I think it was, you know, the next day. I'm not really sure. I don't remember. And but the point being, that's kind of what they're talking about here. Every living creature on Earth dies alone, and there must be something to that. I mean, obviously that's not a universal truth, but there must be some generalized thing that maybe we don't want to die while our loved ones are near us. It's from my experience, it was nothing like the movies. And I've heard this, I got family members that work in the medical industry, and I've heard this before where a lot of people don't fully like go to, I don't know what happens. You got to give up and finally like quit. And go to rest in peace. I don't really know, but like a lot of people, they'll wait until the family members are gone to die. So is there something true to that? Or is Donnie just espousing a satanic doctrine? Oh my God. We went dark. I don't know. But I wanted to share that with you, okay? All right, let's keep it moving. Donnie, he says all this stuff, and do I spoil the ending? I mean, you already know there's plot spoilers. Yeah, I'm going to spoil the ending. So Donnie ends up dying alone in this film, right? So it's almost like he knows it's going to happen, which plays into this deterministic fate idea. And they talk about this throughout the film, this idea of like, can you choose your own path? Is there free will, or is everything predetermined? And it's almost like a combination of the two is what happens with Donnie Darko. And we'll get there. Let's keep it moving with the story. So Donnie, he's chilling. He's just kind of vibing, right? He's just vibing. And he starts seeing this clear goo emanating from everyone's chest. That shows the path they are going to take. It's like predicting the future, time travel by seconds, kind of, or maybe like fate indicating the path that these characters are going to take. But he sees it with his eyes. You see this gel kind of like the abyss, if you've ever seen the movie The Abyss. like his dad like goes to the fridge and you see him follow his own trail that's like a second in front of him. It's hard to explain without showing you. And it starts laying this idea of fate versus free will. So Donnie, we find out he's diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia because he's always talking about this Frank Bunny guy, this imaginary friend of his. And meanwhile, he's staring in the mirror on one of his trips. He's staring at the mirror and stabbing at it with a knife. But Frank's on the other side, so he's stabbing Frank. But not only is he stabbing Frank, he's stabbing Frank in the all-seeing eye, which becomes illuminated. I don't know if you can hear the thunder, but it's like God himself. It's storming out here for once and forever in Utah in the high desert. But the all-seeing eye becomes illuminated. And again, I got the image on the Instagram. You can see what I'm talking about. Taking us back, remember in the first part, we talked about the all-seeing eye poster in Donnie's room. And we talked about the jet engine when they zoomed in had the spiral or the all-seeing eye of Horus. Now, Jim Cunningham, like I told you, this film jumps around scene to scene all the time. Jim Cunningham, a.k.a. Patrick Swayze, he's doing a presentation at school because, like, this is that weird, you know, I don't know, half-Christian, half-guru school. And Swayze talks about this fictional character named Frank. And, of course, Donnie perks up. He's like, Frank? And then Donnie, sort of evoking the spirit of Frank, the crazy bunny, he goes up and gets on the mic and he starts dropping knowledge and he calls Jim Cunningham the Antichrist. Now, I don't know Jim Cunningham here is supposed to be representing Christianity. Like I said, there's not one mention of Christ in the whole movie. I don't know if he represents the establishment, but he gets into trouble as we find out later. Now, here's another fun fact for you. Ashley Tisdale actually made a very minor appearance in this scene. She steps up to the microphone also. I found out who Ashley Tisdale was from one of the top 10 movies of all time, Spring Breakers, which I will be doing a film analysis on sometime here. I don't know when. One of my favorite movies of all time. When we talked about it very briefly on Tinfoil Hat when I did my sort of debate with Alex Kazemi about occult magic and where the problems lie with magicians, because he said he saw Spring Breakers 30 times in the movie theater. It's a lot. It's a lot of times to go to a movie in the movie theater. The Matrix was my favorite movies of all time, and I saw the final Matrix twice in the theater. That's the only time I've ever gone to the theater twice. Okay, so Donnie, he's studying this philosophy of time travel book that was from Grandma Death. Remember, science teacher gave it to him. And he tells his girlfriend, Gretchen, played by Jenna Malone from Hunger Games, that he's seen this stuff. So he shares the details with her, okay? So she's kind of getting hip to what he's up to. And then Donnie, intrigued by all this, goes to his science teacher because he who else is he going to talk to? And the teacher starts explaining to Donnie vessels and how Donnie could be seeing these portals. And you hear talk about this determinism and free will and fate and all these ideas.
Well, each vessel travels along a vector through space-time along its center of gravity.
Like a sphere.
I beg your pardon?
Like a spear that comes out of your chest.
Sure, yeah. And in order for the vessel to travel through time, it's got to find a porthole, or in this case, a wormhole, or...
Well, could these portals just appear anywhere, anytime?
I think that's highly unlikely. No, I think what you're talking about is, an act of God.
Well, if God controls time, then all time's predecided.
I'm not following you.
Like every living thing follows along set path. And if you could see your path or channel, then you could see into the future, right? Like, that's a form of time travel.
Well, you're contradicting yourself, Donnie. If we were able to see our destinies manifest themselves visually, then we would be given a choice to betray our chosen destinies. And the mere fact that this choice exists would make all preformed destiny come to an end.
Not if you travel within God's channel.
I'm not going to be able to continue this conversation.
Why?
I could lose my job.
Okay.
So here we go with understanding that the film was about spirituality, because Donnie argues if you stay in God's channel, you have no free will. And the teacher, he stops the conversation because he says, look, I'm going to lose my job if we go into this exact question, because he is employed by a private Christian school. And, you know, science and Christianity don't always jive. So that's a problem that he faces, and he just shuts it down. Like, look, I can't talk about it. I'll get fired. Now, the subtle cue here is that man, if he follows God, doesn't really have free will. He's kind of doing what he's told. He's obedient. He's subservient. And who is the archetype of the free will? Well, the Antichrist, Lucifer, the rebel angel. That's why in the Garden of Eden, the serpent gives Adam and Eve the free will. And they eat the apple, and boom, they're exiled out of the garden. Because in the Gnostic tale, the serpent says, hey, you don't have to worship this God guy. In fact, God's a real dick, making you worship him forever. Why don't you just get out of this thing and do what you want to do? Do what thou wilt. Which is also why Donnie called Jim Cunningham, Patrick Swayze, the Antichrist, because he represents the path of God, the Christian, that, like we talked about, the school is a Christian school, because in the Gnostic form of reality, everything is inverted. So the Christian faith is the Antichrist. He says it. He says, you're the Antichrist. Okay? So, and hang in there. We'll wrap this up a little nicer in the conclusion. So Donnie, he's now in the classroom, in the science class again, a different day, and him and Gretchen are presenting, I guess they had school projects, and they're talking about these infant memory generators. And listen to what the science teacher says. It's very strange.
So we call them IMGs.
Infant memory generators.
Yeah, so the idea is that you buy these glasses for your infant and they wear them at night when they sleep.
But inside the glasses are these slide photographs, and each photograph is of something peaceful or beautiful, whatever the parents want to put inside.
And what effect do you think that this would have on an infant?
Well, the thing is, nobody remembers their infancy, and anyone who says they do is lying, so we think this will help develop memory earlier in life.
Yeah.
And did you stop and think that maybe infants need darkness? That maybe darkness is part of their natural development?
No.
Yeah.
What if the parents, like, put in pictures of Satan? Or, like, dead people, crap like that?
Is that what you'd show your kids?
Well, I mean, didn't your dad, like, stab your mom?
The teacher says, what if the infants need the darkness for their development? He is saying infants, aka the sheep, the sheeple, the babies out there, they need to embrace the dark side to evolve. That's exactly, it's like Gnostic ideas 101. This idea of there's no such thing as good and evil. You know, Carl Jung always talked about this, embracing the shadow. One must understand the knowledge of good and evil to evolve into the next higher state of consciousness. And this is going to be critical in the conclusion. You're going to love the conclusion. You're going to love it so hard. Now, ironically, the antagonist of the film, this guy doing coke and Seth Rogen, You heard they talked about how, what if you put pictures of Satan in those glasses? Because there's a spiritual element to this film, and that's what they're cueing you into. They're trying to, like, they're trying to subtly show you these ideas. And cue the next scene, we get some more of it. In case you weren't hip to what's going on yet, which you are now, because we're here together talking about it. Donnie and Gretchen, his girlfriend, they go to the movies to see Evil Dead. And they show on the marquee, very clearly, they're playing Evil Dead and Last Temptation of Christ. Some Halloween-themed movies, right? And I looked this up because I was curious about it. Evil Dead was released in 1981, October 15th, 1981 to be specific. But the film takes place in October 1988. So, they're probably replaying Evil Dead because it's Halloween time. But Last Temptation of Christ was actually released in 1988, August 12th, no less. So it's very possible. I mean, that's a pretty long run in the theater, 2 months. I don't know if that was the case. But it's very curious. Because The Last Temptation of Christ, which, look, you're not going to be happy with me on this. You're not going to be proud of me. I'm not proud of me. I've never seen it. I need to see it. It's a Scorsese film. I love Martin Scorsese films. It's a blasphemous film. It's got David Bowie in it, though. I mean, come on. But this film was very controversial. It was considered blasphemous, banned in several countries. And in fact, I was looking up the Richard Kelly interviews, the director of the film, because I was like, what's this all about? With The Last Temptation of Christ being placed there. And Kelly was intrigued by the censorship elements and free speech because he knew what was coming, right? And how the new generation interacts with these ideas. I'm going to read you what he said. For this story, it was about that moment at the very end of the Reagan era when we were in a time of transition and there was a younger generation coming up that was rejecting the war on drugs, the self-help movement, the Reagan policies, and the cultural mandate to behave a certain way. Check, 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 check. I like self-help movement. I'll stick with that. That's the only one that I agree with. Okay. Things like The Last Temptation of Christ being banned from theaters, the tragic and immoral response to the AIDS epidemic, the censorship of different art forms, all of these things that the younger generation was appalled by, there was a transition afoot. So this story had to take place on the eve of this election going into the Halloween weekend, and it had to be that way. I could never tell this particular story in any other way. I argue it has more to do with the spiritual element to the movie. He's saying it has to do with free speech versus censorship. Choose your path, okay? Now, Frank the evil bunny here, he's now hanging out with Donnie everywhere Donnie goes. He is Donnie's holy guardian angel, just like Awaz was Crowley's holy guardian angel. Now, Donnie asks Frank, he says, why are you wearing that stupid bunny suit? Frank responds, why are you wearing that stupid man suit? Again, another Gnostic idea, the idea that we're prisoners, our souls are imprisoned in these flesh bags by the evil god, the demiurge, the god that doesn't hate us but wants us to be in slavery to him forever. He imprisoned our souls into this prison planet. So Donnie, he makes Frank take the mask off, and we see Frank without the bunny without the mask. And it turns out his eye is all busted up, because remember, Donnie stabbed him through the mirror. And Frank says, my name is Frank because that's my father and grandfather's name. And this supports the idea of fate, determinism. He's trapped in this loop of exactly what his parents wanted him to be. He says, you're going to do what your dad did and your grandfather did and all that. But Frank sees the value in liberation, and he's trying to break Donnie from the path laid before him. And he instructs Donnie, you know what you need to do? Go burn down Jim Swayze's house. Patrick Swayze, Jim Cunningham. Fun fact, the guy who plays Frank the Bunny, his name is James Duvall. He's actually the kid from Independence Day who played the son of Randy Quaid, the drunk pilot that saves the world. You know? You remember Randy Quaid from Christmas Vacation? And Randy Quaid made those Star Wacker claims about the Illuminati taking out actors. You remember that? He's going a little nutty. Or was he? I don't know. So anyhow, Donnie Darko, he lights Swayze's house on fire whilst the town is watching a talent show at the cult school there. And the firefighters, they put the fire out. They search the remains of the house. And on the news, we see it. There was a kiddie porn dungeon, hidden room inside the house. And they say that Jim Cunningham there, Patrick Swayze's character, they're connecting him to this entire child porn ring. Now, this seems bizarre, doesn't it? This took a weird turn. Well, here's the thing. I think Richard Kelly, the director, was trying to expose the Hollywood, you know, ring. And Swayze's character, Jim Cunningham, was plugged into the whole community. When you watch the film again, you'll see Dr. Fisher, who was his buddy, Mrs. Fisher, who was the teacher, head of the PTA or whatever. Dr. Fisher was friends with Donnie's family. Remember, they wanted young Samantha, the young girl, to get picked up by Mrs. Fisher. And an idea that we could float here that I actually didn't include this in the conclusion because, you know, I don't know if it fits into the spirituality element of the film, which I think is a higher sort of point of this whole thing. But Donnie might have been subjected to this child abuse, trauma abuse, which started his dissociative identity disorder, which you've heard about so many times. Kathy O'Brien talked about this. And you see the MK Ultra type traumatic injuries happening with these young celebrities. Oh boy. Now, it doesn't fit into the Crowley angle too much, but it's possible because this angle of the story doesn't really fit into the plot of the film or time travel. So why, out of nowhere, this whole thing about the guru, the community leader, and a ring of messing around with this pizza stuff. You know what I'm saying when I say pizza stuff. And the followers of the guru of this cult, they think it's just a conspiracy to smear the fearless leader. Oh my goodness. Could it be? No. Is it Donald Trump and Q? I don't know. 20 years ahead of its time? I mean, curiously enough, guess what Donnie Darko's real name is? Donald J. Darko, just like Donald J. Trump. My God. The ultimate conspiracy theory of them all. I don't know. I could be wrong, but I'm not. Now, next. Let's keep it moving. I don't know. I don't know if that fits into it. I more watch this film than the Gnostic spirituality element and the inverted reality elements, but that's definitely a huge piece of this puzzle. Karen Drew Barrymore, she got fired because she's teaching the kids dangerous books, and you can't have that in the future. And Donnie, he goes back to therapy, and she puts him under hypnosis. This time, there's no hand party, so she lets him talk. And he says, oh, by the way, Frank the Bunny's going to kill everyone. Everyone's going to die.
I want to talk about your past today.
No.
I want to talk about you and your parents.
They didn't buy me what I wanted for Christmas.
What did you want for Christmas that year?
Hungry, hungry hippos.
How did you feel being denied these hungry, hungry hippos?
Regret.
What else makes you feel regret?
That I did it again.
You did it again?
I flooded my school and I burned down that pervert's house. I only have a few days left before they catch me.
Did Frank tell you to do these things?
I have to obey him. He saved my life. I have to obey him or I'll be left all alone. And then I won't be able to figure out what this is all about. I won't be able to know his master plan.
Do you mean God's master plan? Do you now believe in God?
I have the power to build a time machine.
How is that possible? How is time travel possible, Donnie?
Time's up, Frank said.
When is this going to happen?
Soon.
What is going to happen?
Frank is going to kill.
Who is he going to kill? Who is he going to kill, Donnie?
I can see him right now!
This guy's getting open up.
If the sky were to suddenly open up, there would be no law. There would be no rule. There would only be you and your memories. The choices you've made and the people you've touched. If this world were to end, there would only be you and him and no one else.
Now the therapist, she's got a really weird response. Did you hear what she said to him? It's like she's coaching him along. She's like, there would be no law. What are you talking about? You're like egging this kid on. It would just be you and him. She's like grooming him a little bit. So anyway, it's now October 29th. Jeez. Donnie, he walks into the kitchen and we see this large carved pumpkin head of Frank the Bunny. You gotta see this image. If you don't want to see the other ones, you gotta see this one. You gotta get on the Instagram, @IsaacWeishaupt. Link in the show notes. Check it out. Frank the Bunny is on the table, carved out of a pumpkin. What's that all about? Is that a clue to this being a surreal film and none of it's real? I don't know. So Maggie Gyllenhaal, the sister, she didn't play a huge role in this film, but she was in it an awful lot. She just didn't show up a lot in the plot. She gets accepted into Harvard. They throw a big 80s party where people are actually dancing in a house. Cue the cool music. We got the Oingo Boingo and the Joy Division and all that. And then we see it. It's now October 30th. Midnight hits and Donnie's world inverts. Yes, the film technique shows this change of perception, this entrance into a new dimension, the new reality. Samhain ushers in the new age. And you see the camera do the full 180-degree inversion. Again, you got to see the image on the Instagram. And the inversion, this is the same as what we saw in Midsommar, if you remember that. They show the entrance to the new, strange, altered reality when the camera goes 180 degrees. And now Donnie, he sees this gel stuff coming out of everyone's chest, everywhere, coming out of his own chest. And he follows it. And it takes him to the fridge. And what's on the fridge? Clearly, prominently placed, very obvious for the whole audience to see, the owl. That's right. The Minerva owl, the symbol of the Gnostic wisdom. The symbol for the Illuminati. The symbol for the Bohemian Grove. And I got that image on the Instagram too, should you doubt. So Donnie, he gets a crew together. to go over to Grandma Death's house. But then Seth Rogen and his bully friend are threatening them with knives. A car comes speeding up. Donnie says, you know, Deus Ex Machina, our savior, meaning God out of the machine. Deus Ex Machina. That's how you pronounce that. I always get that wrong. Deus Ex Machina, our savior. That's what Donnie says. Meaning there's a savior coming in, and that's the car. But the car accidentally runs over Jenna Malone, his girlfriend, kills Donnie's girlfriend. So he's saved on one level, but his girlfriend's dead, so what good is that? The driver stops and gets out, and guess who it is? Guess who it is? Frank. Frank wearing the bunny costume. Only it's not this, like, supernatural holy guardian angel version of Frank. It's just some bro dressed up as a bunny who drove recklessly and killed Donnie's girlfriend. And now we see all the pieces starting to fit together. Like, well, what's this all about then? So Donnie, he pulls a strap and pow pow shoots Frank right in his all-seeing eye, just like was foreshadowed earlier when he was stabbing at the mirror with the knife and stabbing at Frank's all-seeing eye. Now, this is also what had the sensors all bugged out because it was too much like Columbine. Even though it didn't happen in a school, it was school students shooting each other, gun violence. The only acceptable gun violence is anything but students at a high school, apparently. So Donnie's girlfriend's dead. Frank was just a bro in a bunny costume. Now he's dead. Donald's tripping. Old Donald J. Darko's tripping. He's up early in the morning, goes up to the mountaintops there. He sees this black void opening up in the sky. And he's driving around with his dead girlfriend. And he takes her up to the top of the mountain. And we start hearing about that time travel theory again. And the only thing that he needs to complete the time travel, according to the Philosophy of Time Travel book, is a metal vessel and a portal. Well, we see the portal opening up in the sky, and Donnie's mom just happens to be on a flight coming home. That's the metal vessel, the airplane. And we're not really sure what happens. Like, things get a little bit chaotic and weird. The plane looks like it's hitting some major turbulence. Is it all connected? Well, during the sequence, we get a better look at Donnie's bedroom and that all-seeing eye painting in his room. Turned out that had a bigger role than we thought. They planted that seed at the beginning of the film and then they come back to it. You zoom in and you see a skull in the pupil. This is the Freemasonic symbol for memento mori, to always think about death. And boom, we're back to October 2nd. Time travel happened. The metal vessel happened, which was the airliner. We're back in October 2nd. Donald's in bed this time. He's not passed out on his bike like we saw at the beginning of the film. Which, you know what that means. The big airplane that disappeared from the skies that they could never find. They have no idea why. The engine drops in the bedroom. Donnie dies. Turns out he time traveled back in time to save his girlfriend's life, so she could go on to star in The Hunger Games with Jennifer Lawrence. What a guy. But everyone senses this shift in reality now. This is very Mandela effect. Like, everyone kind of knows, like, wait a minute, something feels like I've done this before. But at least in this new reality, the family's crying because Donnie's dead. So I guess they finally like him. Except for Rose, mom. She's numb to the whole thing. For whatever reason, she's just smoking a cigarette like, oh boy. Here we go again. Now what's odd is that the flight mom was on, Rose was on, the flight she was taking would have been the flight the jet engine came from, because she was in the metal vessel. And I would argue that it would kill her, but that didn't happen. We don't really know. Which leads to the end of the film, which leads to countless theories about what this film was all about. Which leads you and I to the conclusion. And I will tell you what I think this film is about. It's a mix of The Great Reset, The New Normal, The New World Order through alchemy, brought about through ritualistic sacrifice, to bring about the new age of spirituality, the Gnostic worldview. And this film, it has a ton of different scenes meant to keep the audience sort of evaluating and reevaluating what's going on. Is Donnie going on this supernatural journey? Is he having a mental breakdown? Is it schizophrenia? I mean, this is a very demanding film. And that's one reason why it tanked in the box office, but got this cult following after it was released on home video, when smart people like you and I watch it. Refined, intelligent people like us watch it. Let's talk about The Great Reset. We see the apocalypse triggered by a crashing airplane, just like 9/11. Just like the new normal, the events that transformed the world alchemically. Because you remember, Donnie tells the therapist that Frank wants him to follow him into the future because the world is coming to an end. The apocalypse, the revelation of the method. And you recall the film was shown at Sundance in January 2001, released in theaters October 2001. So the plane crash was still too raw, and this supposedly made the movie hard to sell to crowds. Why so long between January and October to release it in theaters? Well, they couldn't find distributors because Donald was a high school student with mental illness shooting guns, and that was very close to the Columbine story. And you'll recall some other predictive programming that I remember as a child watching Pearl Jam's Jeremy video back in 91. In that video, it showed a kid going into the classroom, and it appeared that he shot up the class because everyone's like covered in blood, but it was actually him getting up in front of the class and shooting himself. And I remember that was a big to-do when it was released. I remember even as a kid being like, that's satanic. That's scary. I was pretty young, but I remember it very clearly. And then what do you know, Columbine happened just a few years later. Very strange. 9/11. Let's talk about 9/11 a bit. And I plan on doing, I told you last year I was going to do a big mega 9/11 show. I'm hoping I can make that happen for you still. I got a lot of homework to do on it still. I'll put together something. I'll see what I can do. I've got this lecture I'm doing in Salt Lake City that's consuming a lot of my time. I gotta get this thing done in September. Maybe September 11th, 9/11. Very important. Crowley said 11 was the most accursed number. That's why it was the K added to magic. It's the 11th letter in the alphabet. Gematria, right? The Twilight language. As above, so below. All these magic ideas, which, remember, Donnie's younger sister Samantha said the prince was being led into a world of magic. That's Donnie Darko. Fun fact, Maggie Gyllenhaal was in 2006's World Trade Center film, connecting another 9/11 reference. Now, Crowley, he's part of this whole thing because remember Donnie's mother? Her name was Rose. Well, Aleister Crowley's first Scarlet Woman was named Rose Kelly. She was the one who told him back in 1904, they are waiting for you. And she led him to the Cairo Museum in Egypt. And he followed her to exhibit number 666 for Horus, which is what the jet engine looked like it had a symbol for, which is where Frank the Bunny gets stabbed in his all-seeing eye of Horus. It's the whole plot of the story. And this new religion of Thelema that was Aleister Crowley's religion based upon the notes dictated to him from Awaz, his holy guardian angel. That's his Frank the Bunny. Told him about the new religion of the new age, Thelema. And the new age coming, the Aeon of Horus. This religion. Oh, and by the way, the statement of Thelema, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. It's an 11-word commandment with 11 syllables, I believe. Do what thou wilt. Yeah, I'm sure. do the math on that. Make sure I'm not leading you astray. And recall that Donnie said in the classroom, destruction is a form of creation. And what do you think 9/11 was? An alchemical principle, a ritual. Destruction is a form of creation. They need to create the new world order. Bring down the two towers to pull up the one single tower. This is the Kabbalistic tree of life to create the pillar of consciousness in between the two pillars. Also curious is that Donnie floods the school. Could be symbolism of water in the age of Aquarius, if you want to go that route with it. But ultimately, we have to talk about the Gnostic spirituality. That's one of the religions of this new world that we're going to be living in, I guess. A Gnostic realm, which was part of the Last Temptation of Christ. That was why it was so blasphemous. It had Gnostic themes of Christ having relations with Mary Magdalene. And a whole storyline about his own holy guardian angel that tells him, hey, you're not the Messiah, you're just the Son of God. I guess. It doesn't make you the Messiah. But that's the Gnostic idea. It's like Jesus was, you know, he was a cool dude. He was just a spiritual messenger. He was not really God. But the Christian faith, at least in Orthodoxy, is like, no, Jesus Christ was God. Make no doubt about it. God the Son. But the Gnostics want to downplay his role and just be like, no, he's no different than the other spiritual messengers. Which is, you know, diluting the idea of the power and the awesomeness of God, God the Son. And recall throughout the film, Donnie Darko, he says, you can't choose between fear and love. Because in Gnosticism, you got to embrace the opposing forces. You have to accept all of it, good and evil. You can't know thyself until you know the shadow. The darkness. And recall Donnie saying the search for God is absurd because you end up dying alone anyway. Recall Jim Cunningham, Patrick, aka Patrick Swayze, and how there's these Christian values without ever mentioning Christ's name the whole time, the whole movie. And Donnie grabbed the mic and called Swayze the Antichrist? Recall Donnie Darko arguing that if you stay in God's channel, you have no free will. And the science teacher was kind of like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Hey, I can't talk about it, but hey, good thinking, buddy. Recall the science teacher the next day telling Donnie infants need darkness for their development? Because the infants are us. That's us, you and I. We're just stupid babies that need to embrace the darkness to evolve. Recall Frank the Bunny telling Donnie he's wearing a stupid human suit. And we also, of course, see the sacrifice of Donnie's girlfriend. And then Donnie himself on Samhain, led by the Minerva owl that was on the fridge prior to his death. Just like the Bohemian Grove's giant owl of sacrifice at the cremation of care ceremonies. And it happens. It all happens to go down on Halloween, one of two satanic holidays, or three, I guess. There's Beltane, Halloween, or aka Samhain, and then your birthday. Three satanic holidays. It represents the passing into the new season, the new time, from fall into winter. And if you read the Golden Bough, that talks about all these ancient cultures, and how much they loved sacrificing people. You can read about how the Celts used to celebrate Halloween as the beginning of the new year. And that's where they would light all the bonfires, and there's all these, you know, references of human sacrifice to the gods, because you always got to appease the gods for the crops or the rain or whatever you're trying to get. But that Minerva owl on the fridge is the source of wisdom that Frank is bestowing to Donnie, no different than Awaz, the holy guardian angel for Aleister Crowley, did to him. And oh, by the way, recall that Minerva is the initiatory rank for the Illuminati secret society, and the owl was the symbol for that group. It's all connected here. So just to sum it all up, Frank is the holy guardian angel, leading Donnie to his universal calling, the gnosis of the Gnostic wisdom, so that he could usher in the new age through sacrifice to the pagan gods. So there you go. That's what I think the movie's all about. What do you think? And there's a sequel, S. Darko. I remember seeing this like 10 years ago. Not good. Not good at all. Filmed in Utah, by the way. So there you go. Whew, that was a lot of information. A lot going on in Donnie Darko. And again, one last time, I will plead to you. I'll keep reading the reviews, the ratings, the feedback, wherever you... Apple's kind of like the place I like to read them, but you can probably drop it anywhere and I'll find it. I'm going to read those up through till Halloween. Why not, right? Till Halloween. And thank you for those that have already dropped the review. I appreciate it. That's actually how you can help me out, because it'll keep the show fresh on the algorithms and show active users and listeners enjoying it, and it'll keep it to the top, because you know, I've been shadow banned and banned and censored so many times, it's exhausting. So there you go. Leave your review if you want to help the show. If you want to support the show, drop a 5-star. I'll read them. And until next time, you know what to do. Stay woke.